You may be seated.
Significant mix of those announcements.
Call the next case.
Sierra Club v. State Corporation Commission and others, Evan D. Johns and Ray Restrepo, Appellant Counsel, John F. Doling, Counsel to the Commission, Gregory D. Oxenford, Associate General Counsel, Joseph K. Reed III, Robert W. Lofton, Elena Bryan, Lisa S. Booth, Appellant Counsel.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Evan Johns, appearing on behalf of the Sierra Club. I'd like to introduce my co-counsel, Andres Restrepo. He's been admitted to appear pro hoc vice in this case, and I ask that he be permitted to give the oral argument today.
Sure.
May it please the Court. My name is Andres Restrepo, and I will be presenting arguments for Sierra Club. I'd also like to reserve 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The Corporation's Commission's denial of Sierra Club's petition in the proceeding below should be reversed for two reasons. First, the Commission has violated the plain language of the Affiliates Act because it has not provided prior review and approval of the Preston Agreement, the key substantive component of a natural gas transportation arrangement between the utility, BEPCO, and two corporate affiliates, VPSE and Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Second, in the absence of proper Affiliates Act review, the Club has suffered a legally cognizable procedural injury for which it has no other adequate remedy. The plain language of the Affiliates Act requires that any contract or arrangement between a utility and its affiliate must, before it can be entered into, be submitted to the Commission for its review and either its approval or disapproval based upon a public interest determination. The Commission has erred because there has been no Affiliates Act review of the Preston Agreement, even though that agreement is part of an arrangement fits within the meaning of the statute. The utility in this case has directed VPSE to enter into the agreement, the Preston Agreement, on its behalf for its benefit, and for the sole purpose of supplying the utility's generating stations with natural gas transportation. The utility will also be responsible for reimbursing VPSE the entirety of the billions of dollars of fees that VPSE will incur over the course of the transaction's lifetime. The utility is thus a true party in interest to the Preston Agreement, which is a paradigmatic example of the kind of transaction that the General Assembly had in mind when it passed the Affiliates Act. This Court has held in the Roanoke Gas, Lynchburg Gas, and Reynolds Metals cases that the animating purpose behind the Affiliates Act was the need to prevent transactions in which a utility's affiliate receives an unjust benefit at the expense of consumers. And that's exactly the risk of the Preston Agreement.
But doesn't,
please.
Doesn't Code Section 56249.6 provide for fixing that harm if it were to occur for overcharges?
Your Honor, the opportunity for post hoc review through cost disallowance in rate making cases or fuel factor cases is not an adequate remedy for two reasons. First, as a pure statutory matter, the General Assembly has made a determination that inter-affiliate transactions must be reviewed prior to being entered into, in addition to the opportunity for post hoc review. That was the reasoned judgment of the General Assembly. And the reason that they passed the statute was out of a determination that after the fact mechanisms like cost disallowance were not a sufficient prophylactic against the kinds of abuses that are potential or inherent in inter-affiliate transactions. For other kinds of transactions, post hoc review might be sufficient, but there must be an extra layer of scrutiny for these kinds of transactions. Secondly, Your Honor, there's a functional consideration, and that's where when costs are disallowed after they've already been expended by utility, that can pose a significant harm to ratepayers. For instance, when costs are disallowed after the fact, that could significantly harm the utility's credit. It can foreclose certain financing opportunities, and that in turn can negatively affect the quality of service or the availability of service.
Well, let's assume that all of that policy rationale is superlative and perfect in every way. Why wouldn't the statute say 77A made or entered into between a public service company and any affiliate interests or between two affiliate interests alone? Why wouldn't it say that?
Your Honor, what the statute applies to contracts or arrangements. And in that sense, as the Commission staff and General Counsel have held on multiple occasions, the word arrangement is necessarily broader than contract in order to have any operative value within the statute.
So an arrangement between two affiliate companies is an arrangement with the parent company?
No, Your Honor. In this case, the present agreement is between VPSC and Atlantic Coast Pipeline, but it was part of a broader arrangement that includes the utility. It's a contract, but the contract is part of a broader arrangement.
Well, all affiliates are, well, subsidiary affiliates are subsidiaries of a parent, so they're always going to be affiliated with a parent. It seems like it just circles around.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, the utility is essentially VPSC, which is the subsidiary, is essentially just it's the utility's agent in this case. It has no function other than to simply be deputized to enter into future contracts.
Well, it's more than that. Corporate formalities, if it's being followed, and appropriate GAAP rules are being followed on the financial side, we're dealing with different entities in the law.
Your Honor, all three of these entities here are within the same parent company. And the Commission staff and General Counsel has determined that if, in fact, we were to conclude that because even though the utility is a party in interest to this transaction, if it were to be excluded from the ambit of the Affiliates Act, then that would essentially defeat the purpose of the Act, which would be to examine where the real conflict in interest here lies. The Fuel Management Agreement is what deputizes VPSC to act as the utility's agent here. But the Fuel Management Agreement is essentially just an empty shell. It's simply a contract for future contracts. But the precedent agreement is really where the substance of this arrangement is. It poses a significant potential risk to ratepayers in the form of potentially increased costs and increased rates, and in terms of a potentially distorted incentive to invest in certain resources because of oversupply.
And how is that potential harm ripe for adjudication in this proceeding?
Well, Your Honor, the reason it's ripe is again, because we have a procedural injury that we have suffered. The fact of the matter is the statute requires prior review and approval. And in the absence of prior review and approval, the case law makes clear, this is the familiar Lujan standard, that when an agency has procedural requirements it must fulfill, and it fails to fulfill those requirements, any party whose interest would be subjected to a heightened risk thereby has suffered a procedural injury. This transaction should have been approved prior to being entered into back in, I believe, August of 2014. So therefore, we are suffering a present and ongoing injury. The fact that our harm that we may be suffering, or that our members may suffer in terms of increased rates and in terms of distorted incentives for the investment in gas generation resources due to oversubscribed pipeline capacity, that may be in the future. But the declaratory judgment action necessarily implicates harm that may occur in the future. The moving purpose of the statute is preventive relief. That's language from this court and Southern Bank of Norfolk. And the court has held in case after case that threat of harm is sufficient. Not just harm, but threat of harm is sufficient for declaratory judgment purposes. We see that in Vance v. Beeman. We see that in Cup v. Board of Supervisors. We see that in Hoppin Family LLC. So the fact is, it's not just a possibility that the club's interest may be harmed. It's a virtual certainty. The utility has made clear in its 2017 IRP filing that it will seek cost recovery from ratepayers for the expenses of the precedent agreement. And so the remedy supplied...
But they have not yet.
Oh, Your Honor, they have not. But the fact is that they have said that they plan to. Prior review and approval is required under the statute before the transaction.
But if you have no right to participate in the prior review and approval, how does that give you standing for a current harm
as opposed to
a speculative future harm?
Yes, Your Honor, I would have two responses to that. First, the Commission's order below in no way relies upon the argument that there are no participatory rights to third-party interveners. And so under First Virginia...
But does it have to if their position is that you are asserting futuristic speculative harms, which is the basis of their decision, and if you have no right to participate in the procedural, why do they have to state that?
Well, Your Honor, I would first say we do have a right to participate. Under Rule 80B of the Commission's Rules of Practice and Procedure, any interested person that has a legally cognizable interest in some sort of matter, a regulatory proceeding, becomes a party to that proceeding upon filing a notice of participation as a respondent. there's no discretion for the commission to reject notices of participation under Rule 80B. And indeed, a litigant...
Does that rule apply to this kind of contract review?
Yes, Your Honor. Litigants regularly cite Rule 80B when they participate as third-party respondents in Affiliates Act review cases. And in fact, even where the commission has denied requests for formal hearings submitted by third-party interveners, they have still received briefing and responded to briefing from those third-party interveners, as they must. This was in the Virginia National Gas Company case cited in our
brief.
But
part of your argument is that there was no Affiliates Act intervention proceeding
right
here. And so it almost seems as if you're trying to force them to establish a proceeding so that you can then claim ADV right to participate in a proceeding that their argument is you have no right to participate.
Right, and that's correct, Your Honor. And the commission is simply incorrect on that. ADB does provide a right. And in any event, we don't actually need a right to participate in the proceeding to have suffered a procedural injury. Any party whose interests are subjected to a heightened risk merely by virtue of the fact that the procedures have not been provided by the agency suffers a cognizable procedural injury. If, in fact, there were an Affiliates Act review, even if we couldn't participate in the hearing or present a briefing otherwise, we would still have suffered, we would still have an additional layer of protection, and our interest that would otherwise be subjected to a heightened risk would be more sufficiently protected. So we don't actually even need to have participatory rights to have procedural standing in this case.
Can I ask you this? Am I oversimplifying what you're saying on the ultimate legal theory that everything turns on the word arrangement?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe so. I believe that arrangement is necessary.
Yes, I'm oversimplifying.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. You're correct that the word arrangement is a key component of this case.
So what's the best argument that the plain language of 77A, by using the word arrangement or contract, means something other than public service company and one of its affiliates?
Your Honor, I believe that an arrangement is broader than contract. That was the holding of staff and the general counsel. An arrangement, just the plain language, is a provision or plan in preparation for an undertaking or the way that things are organized for a particular
purpose. Okay, let me pause you there. Let's use exactly that definition. Mm-hmm. It's just what you said it is. Between a public service company and one of its affiliates, not between two affiliates among themselves.
Well, Your Honor, in this case, the utility directed VPSE to enter into the transaction for its benefit. Even if it's not a contracting party, it still is the moving entity behind the precedent agreement. The precedent agreement wouldn't exist without the utility. And
well,
so it is part of the
I would imagine the SEC knows how parent-subsidiary relations work and affiliate relations work, and they did not include the language you are implying.
Your Honor, the staff and counsel have concluded, as we conclude, that they didn't need to go that far. As long as there is an arrangement, regardless of whether or not there's a formal contracting relationship with the utility, if the utility is a key component of it and a moving force and a beneficiary, that is sufficient to establish an arrangement.
Counsel, you, when the four-minute mark came, you were embroiled in a colloquy. You're now down to 2 minutes
yes.
and 40 seconds.
I'd like to reserve the balance.
Okay,
of my time. Thank you.
And I understand that for the appellees, the commission will have 10 minutes and Dominion will have 5 minutes of
yes,
the
Your
time
Honor.
Being divided.
Okay. Yes, thank you.
May it please the court, my name is John Dudley and I'm with the State Corporation Commission. The commission did not make a mistake of law when it denied the Sierra Club's request. The Sierra Club asked the commission to litigate issues that are not ripe under the Affiliates Act. The Sierra Club wanted to argue that the rates were too high. The Affiliates Act is not a rate review. That will happen under the Virginia Fuel Rate Statute 56249.6. When the utility incurs costs under these contracts, and these are fuel costs, they're for natural gas storage and transportation, they're considered fuel costs under the Virginia statute. When the utility incurs fuel costs, after it incurs those costs, it comes to the commission and it seeks recovery for those costs, and it has the burden to prove at that time that those costs were just and reasonable. And that applies whether or not the utility buys it from an affiliate or from an independent third party. So the argument that the commission needs to pre-approve a utility fuel cost to make sure the utility doesn't make a bad deal and get costs disallowed. That doesn't sit, because that's not how this Virginia fuel statute works. The utility makes this business decision on where it's going to purchase its fuel, whether it be from an affiliate or an independent third party. And those costs, the specific just and reasonableness of those costs, are looked at as part of the fuel statute. And like I said, the utility at that time will have the burden of proof under the rate statute to prove that those costs were just and reasonable.
As I understand counsel's argument, they are arguing that the commission is addressing an argument that they're not really making. As I understand their argument, they're saying that there was a procedural right to participate in an Affiliates Act hearing, which they did not have the opportunity to do, either because there wasn't one or because they weren't invited to the party. I'm not sure which. But they're saying that is the claim that they are alleging is a current active violation that allows them standing to participate.
Okay.
I think that's their argument.
Multi-party answer. In the case below the commission, they argued that they had to come in front of the commission to make these rate and facility arguments to the commission. So the petition in front of the commission, that's why the commission's final order said your request isn't right because we don't address those questions in the Affiliates Act. So they did ask that in the petition in the case below. That's why the commission got into the rightness analysis in the final order in the case below.
So
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm afraid I didn't fully answer Your Honor's question.
He'll wait.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
He's a very polite man. He'll wait. We all know that.
They don't have a right to participate. It's not a poke hawk rationalization, because it wasn't part of the rationalization at all. The rationalization was your request wasn't right, and we actually, if I get to it, have a chance to get to it, we've actually already looked at these contracts and had them filed with the commission. The point about they don't have a right to participate is in the opening brief, appears to suggest the commission made a mistake of law from what you just said, Your Honor, by not allowing them to come in and participate in an affiliates case. We have somehow violated the statute. So in our brief, we responded to that, but that cannot be an error of law, because there is nothing in the Affiliates Act that gives a third party a right to participate. All the statutes that they cite in the reply brief, see on page 3 or 5, in opposition to that, all the statutes they cite actually say third parties have the right to participate. The Affiliates Act does not give that right, and there's some other statutes that the commission implements that don't give a right for third parties to participate. The commission can exercise its discretion, but there's not a statutory right, so there can't be an error of the law. The rate
counsel,
case.
I
need to answer the ADB question, too.
But my question for you is, the statute says it has to be a hearing, formal or informal. So by requiring a hearing, then by rules of the commission, people have a right to appear at a hearing.
Thank you, because in that push me right to my ADB. They did not fully quote Rule ADB in the reply brief. ADB says a notice of participation shall be filed within the time prescribed by the commission. ADB says you can file a notice of participation if the commission lets you. ADB doesn't overwrite every statute that the General Assembly might pass that doesn't give parties a right to participate. Just because an application or petition is filed with the commission, ADB doesn't stand for the proposition that anybody can file or participate at any time. ADB says you may file within the time prescribed by the commission. The commission has to first allow and say, we're going to allow notices of participation. Affiliates Act cases under Chapter 4, Securities Act cases under Chapter 3, but the commission has the discretion to. Sometimes the commission does. A party will file a request and say, hey, I'd like to participate in this case. And if a party raises, they mentioned the BNG case that's now pending in front of the commission. A third party came in, said, I'd like to participate in this case, raise an issue that the commission found was right for the Affiliates Act review. The commission exercised its discretion and said, okay, we will allow under ADB notice of participation to be filed. But ADB doesn't set a rule that overwrites any potential statute that gives the commission discretion whether or not to allow notice of participation. The commission has to prescribe.
Is a notice of participation different from having a hearing? Does ADB require that there be a hearing, either formal or informal, whether they're allowed to participate or not?
No, the statute requires a hearing, either formal or informal. It's the words in 50-something. It says the commission has to have a hearing, formal or informal. And the way almost all of the Affiliates Act cases work, and we use the term administratively in our brief, and that's maybe more colloquial, it's to discuss the process where there is no notice. There are no participants. There is no hearing. It's the commission makes its informal hearing on the pleadings, if you will. The utility files an application. The commission staff reviews it, files something into the record, and tells utility, this is what we think we're going to tell the commission to do. The commission tries to give the utility a chance to respond within the 60 days before the commission makes its final decision. Utility files something back. The commission issues an order. That's the informal hearing under the statute, and that's, and the commission is implementing that since the 1930s when the statute was originally passed. It was passed as the commission taking the first look at an affiliate transaction that doesn't get the rate or the certificate of public and facility type cases, which then leads me to...
What is the commission's position as to whether 5677A applies to this contractual relationship or not?
The commission did not answer that question. The commission chose a way to get the contract without having to answer that question.
Why did the commission choose to go that route? That's a key question.
In our brief, we cited the best and narrowest grounds. Once the commission found that all of these, back in 2014, the commission's been regulating these fuel contracts since 1999. In 2014, the commission said, there are more and more of these. We need to have them all together in one docket and look at them all together to know whether any one of them is in the public interest under the Affiliates Act. And so once the commission decided we need to look at all of them, regardless of whether or not it's an arrangement or not an arrangement, the answer to that legal question, Dominion, you have to file them because we need to see them to know whether any of these other ones are in the public interest. We have, and so once it made that decision, then it chose not to reach the legal.
And by doing so, it actually hamstrings the analysis here. You're familiar with the case of First Virginia Bank versus Commonwealth, of course. It's cited in both briefs. And in that case, this court said, even where the commission has reached the right result for the wrong reasons, its decision, unlike that of a trial court, will not be permitted to stand. Here, the commission avoided, does 5677A apply to affiliate contracts? Instead, the commission went an alternative route and said, let's presume that 5677A does apply, and therefore we have complied with it by this process that we use. With that in mind, and with our precedent squarely before us, can we even answer the question, does 5677A apply to affiliate contracts? The commission hasn't answered it. We are not allowed to do a right for the wrong reason analysis.
The commission didn't assume it applied or didn't apply. The commission just didn't reach it. I mean, the commission didn't assume that...
It said, even if it applies, if I...
I guess the commission didn't reach the question, so then you're... And I'm going to be going into the red, but...
Go ahead.
Okay, your question is, can the court address the question? I don't think this is a right result for wrong reason situation because... They've alleged an error of law. This isn't the right result for the wrong reason principle goes to when the court's looking at the judgment. Let's say the commission's setting a return on equity or the commission's making a judgment based upon the record. The court's reviewing that fact base, that abuse of discretion or the deference that you find. The right result for wrong reason is the commission decided to do X, and the court's looking to see if there's sufficient evidence to do X. And well, no, there's not if you look at this evidence. But if the court looks at this evidence, then yeah, maybe you could do X. That's at least my understanding of the right result for wrong reason. The court's not reviewing whether or not the commission should or shouldn't have approved these contracts. It's an error of law. Did the commission have an obligation to allow Sierra Club to come and argue about rates and facilities as part of a Affiliates Act case, which is, I believe, a question of law.
Well, I respect your answer, and I appreciate the answer. But I'm going to come back with the SEC versus Chenery Corporation, United States Supreme Court, which relates directly to our First Virginia Bank holding, where it says, a review in court in dealing with a determination or judgment which an administrative agency alone is authorized to make must judge the propriety of such action solely by the grounds invoked by the agency. And that's actually the basis for this court saying right, no right for the wrong reason when it comes to, you know, this particular agency, which is a court of equal dignity with this one. So,
if I may, I think what you just read mirrors what I was trying to say, that then you're looking at a decision the administrative agency is allowed to make. If we had approved an affiliate contract for one reason, but you think it should have been approved for another, I believe what you just read to me says the court can't approve it for another. You can only look at the reasons the commission approved it. But that's an exercise of the administrative agency's discretion that the General Assembly has tasked us to do. The question before the court now, they've just raised, I believe, an error of law. And an error of law is that the commission violated the statute when we didn't allow them to participate in the Affiliates Act case and raise non-ripe issues. So again, I think the case you cited still supports that it's not applicable to what's been assigned here.
You're a good attorney. Thank you. My question's answered.
May it please the court. I am Joe Reed on behalf of Virginia Power and VPSE, and I'd just like to follow up on a few of the questions from the bench this morning. First, Justice Kelsey, to your issue of whether or not, under the language of 5677, this agreement would be subject to Affiliates Act review, of course, it's been the position of the company below that it would not. The Sierra Club suggests that the term arrangement is somehow broader than the term contract. I would disagree with that. An arrangement is something different from a contract. For example, if the utility, the public service corporation in this instance, Virginia Power, had a need for employee support, and that was provided by affiliate of employees who then charged their time to a Virginia Power cost center. No written agreement, no contract. That is an arrangement, which is different from a contract, which would require Affiliates Act review.
If I could cut to the chase for you, supposing what you say is perfectly reasonable and consistent with the ordinary meaning of the terms, the SEC, as of 15 minutes ago, is not even willing to make the argument in court, and they dodged it below, and their staff disagrees with it, apparently. So where does that put the rest of us?
I think it puts the court here, Your Honor. It's clear under the plain language, to the point I think you're suggesting, of 5677, that Affiliates Act approval is required only when the public service corporation, here Virginia Electric and Power Company, is a party to the contract or arrangement, which is not the situation here. What the commission did below, however, is to approve the arrangement properly between Virginia Power and VPSE. Then, pursuant to 5680, which grants them continuing supervisory control over the contract, the fuel management agreement between Virginia Power and VPSE, required that the contract between VPSE and ACP be presented to the commission for review. And it is the commission's position, as evidenced in their brief, that pursuant to 5680, their independent authority under 5680, they have approved the contract between ACP and VPSE.
So I just want to make sure where we are procedurally, and your answer was quite careful, but essentially what it amounts to is this. The commission twice has had the opportunity to answer the question, does 5677A apply to contracts that are between two affiliates, and it has now declined to answer that question twice. Rather than your client forcing an answer to that question, your client has agreed with the commission in a collegial fashion, we're going to go ahead and give you these contracts as they are made for informational purposes. And based upon the commission's declining to answer an obvious question, and along with that, the agreement by your client to provide something that the law may not require, this case is now before us. And in fact, that question is not before us if, in fact, we follow First Virginia Bank. Have I set that up correctly from a procedural perspective?
I think it's largely accurate, Justice Mims, and I can't speak for why the commission addressed the...
And I'm not asking you to.
Declined to address the question of whether...
your client and the commission may actually part company if that question were, in fact, directly...
But I think, Your Honor, I'm not sure that I would agree that this court is in a position where it cannot determine that the agreement between VPSE and ACP never required commission approval in the first instance, under the plain language of 5677, which would require that Virginia Power, the Public Service Corporation, be a party to the agreement. I'd also like to respond briefly to the questions from Justice Powell and Justice Lacey on the requirement for a hearing, and just make this point, that Rule 100C of the Commission's rules requires, before a declaratory judgment will be entertained, that there be no other adequate remedy. And I think it's significant here that the Sierra Club did not petition in this case to reopen the question in the 2014 docket, which remains open. It is not a closed case. It is under the Commission's continuing supervisory control. They didn't intervene in 2014, they didn't intervene in 2016 in that docket. Years later, they've come back and petitioned for a declaratory judgment. They could have asked in that docket that this issue be readdressed to the extent that they believe it wasn't sufficiently addressed by the commission in the first instance. That was not the relief that they requested, and I believe that proceeding under Rule 100C for and 8.01184 for a declaratory judgment was procedurally improper in this case. And then I would reiterate the arguments that Mr. Dudley made, that it is very typical that these Affiliates Act proceedings are determined administratively, informally.
I don't want to interrupt you, but you are over time, but I've been given leave to ask you a question. And I just wanted to clarify your response to Justice Mims' question. When the Commission asked for the contract, the inter-affiliate contract question here, under its continuing control, continuing jurisdiction 5680, could either one of the affiliates have said, or could VEPCO have said, no, we're not going to give you that contract?
I think the company, because its position was that inter-affiliate agreement was not subject to Affiliates Act.
That's not my question. I'm talking about the Commission's continuing oversight authority under 5680, not under the Affiliates Act itself.
Yes.
Could they have, when they asked for that contract, could VEPCO have declined to give it to them? They're asking for it under the Affiliates Act, as I understand.
That's true, Your Honor. I think that would have been at great peril, and interpreting the Commission's authority under 5680 broadly and without waiving the argument that 5677 did not specifically apply to that agreement, the company determined that it should submit it to the Commission.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Madam Clerk, both of the appellees took extra time. Would you put 4 minutes, the time that the Sierra Club requested for rebuttal, onto the clock?
At 4 minutes?
At 4 minutes, yes.
At 4 minutes.
Uh-huh. No, I'm sorry, excuse me. At 4 minutes.
Okay.
Okay. You may proceed.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. On to participatory rights. As I mentioned earlier, the club doesn't need to have participatory rights in order to have suffered a procedural injury. That is the teaching of the influential Lujan position. And we have always maintained in our proceeding, in the briefing below, and in the briefing here of that. Your Honor, I should mention that as to ADB, the Commission has not cited a single instance in which it has denied a notice of participation under ADB. It's a notice of participation, not a petition to participate. And so that is not supported by the record. As to First Virginia Bank that Justice Mims mentioned, the order below, it's a very bare-bones order. It doesn't mention participatory rights. It doesn't in any way say that the reason that this petition is being denied is because Sierra Club has no standing because of a lack of the ability to participate.
Now, based upon the principle of it's possible to win the battle and lose the war, if we were to interpret First Virginia Bank strictly, it could require us to tell the Commission, decide once and for all, yes or no, up or down, does 77A apply to inter-affiliate contracts? Is that a question that you are asking us to require the Commission to answer?
Your Honor, I believe that we are asking the Commission, its order can, if Your Honor decides that it can only be upheld on the grounds that are in the order, then it would have to simply deny and reverse the position below, and then we would be remanded to further discuss that issue.
Well, let's not beat around the bush. The question that it would be remanded for is, does 77A apply to inter-affiliate agreements? And if indeed we were to consider that, is that what you are requesting?
Yes, Your Honor. We are requesting that this court hold that, in fact, the transaction must be reviewed under the Affiliates Act. But as an alternative, if it could not be upheld on that ground, then the court can't uphold it on the grounds that it is not a transaction within the meaning of the statute. It can only either uphold it or reverse it because we are correct in that the precedent agreement does.
So we can only address the legal issue if you win it.
Yes, Your Honor. We maintain that, in fact, the statute does apply to this situation.
Do you want us to answer the question, yes or no, whether the statute applies to interaffiliate agreements and arrangements?
Your Honor, that is what we have asked in our brief.
So if we say yes or no, whichever answer is disfavorable to you, you're willing to deal with that?
What we would say is that there are two potential responses here. Either the court agrees with our position, or it determines that it can't be upheld on that ground, the order below, or it agrees that it was never answered, and so it can't be upheld. Okay, but
so
I don't believe that
you want us to answer the question if you win it, but not to answer the question if you lose it.
That would be ideal, Your Honor. I should like to also point out, Your Honor, that the Commission has never approved the precedent agreement. It has continuing supervisory over the fuel management agreement.
It might be because the Commission really knows that it doesn't have the authority to do so, and that's why they've got this agreement between the power company and the Commission. That submit it to us, and we'll look at it. But ultimately, we're not going to make that determination.
Your Honor, as I mentioned before, the staff and general counsel believe that they not only have the authority but the obligation. And I believe that if the statute did not encompass the precedent agreement, then the statute would essentially be emasculated because it couldn't reach the true issue that presents a potential conflict of interest.
The question is not what should the statute say. The only question we can answer here in Virginia is what does the statute say.
And how would you distinguish between?
Go ahead.
How would you distinguish between formal and informal under the Affiliates Act?
Your theory
that you get full participation.
Your Honor, the statute doesn't make a distinction in terms of what is informal and what is formal. There may be guidance from the Commonwealth Administrative Process Act. Traditionally, informal hearings may not necessarily have the same rules of evidence. It may not have a court reporter or a formal record. But as I discussed before, for instance,
your theory is regardless of whether it's formal or informal, you have the right to participate.
Well, and even if we were excluded from the hearing, there's still the larger proceeding, Your Honor. For instance, there's the opportunity to submit written briefs, and where the Commission has denied requests for a formal hearing or ostensibly for a hearing at all, it has still received and responded to briefs from third-party respondents. All right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
All rise.